Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Brill. Joining us is one of my favorite people, Dai Li, and she is going to talk to us about really this concept of ethics in AI. Dai, please tell us all about yourself.
Thank you for having me on today. My name is Dai. I am an AI ethicist and a human-centered AI strategist at ServiceNow, and I work at this interesting, developing intersection of AI governance, UX research, product design, and of course, ethics. My work focuses on human-centered AI collaboration, safeguard-oriented design for AI experiences, and helping teams to build technology that is worthy of human trust and that aligns with innovation, but also societal values.
That's a lot to go over, and that's a very heavy weight on your shoulders that I can feel and is tangible. But the one big question I want to ask you as we get into this, because this is the one where I think where I get confused, and I think other people get confused, when we're talking about AI ethics and human-centered design and ethical AI, are we talking about preventing, and I hate to say it, but we say it all the time when it comes to AI, is this about preventing Skynet and Terminator 2, 3, and 4, or is this something different?
An accumulation and an amalgamation of all of the above. And before we get too deep into splitting hairs between morals and ethics and like, what does this all mean? If I may, I would love to do a initial dive into certain terms, what they may mean in the industry, because sometimes they are used interchangeably, but at least in the context of today's conversation, I'd like to be able to define some of the terms we might be using.
Absolutely, please, because this is a very, this is definitely one of those conversations you hear people have, and they're throwing out a lot of word soup, and it's like, I don't think anyone understands what anyone's talking about, except a handful of people, and this is really important.
So for context, we live in a very nuanced era, and any of these terms could be an entire course on their own. But at least in the line of my work, when we talk about responsible AI, ethical AI, and human-centered AI, here are the things that differentiate them. First, responsible AI is this umbrella term that encompasses the industry of research, policies, and people that are working towards a safer type of AI. But in practice, it's the organizational and governance layer. It's about processes, accountability structures, risk management, compliance. It's the how do we operationalize responsibility question. When a company says we practice responsible AI, they should mean they have governance frameworks, oversight mechanisms, frameworks and guidelines, and accountability chains in place. They should have systems and structures that make good intentions actionable. The ServiceNow Responsible AI page, which has a wealth of resources, including white papers, our mission statements, our principles, and the responsible and human-centered AI guidelines that I was so fortunate to have the opportunity to lead the creation of with brilliant minds. But jumping on like ethical AI, what are ethics when it comes to AI? And ethical AI is more the philosophical approach to the research. It's the values and principles layer. It's the what should we do and why type of questioning. Fairness, transparency, avoiding harm. These are ethical commitments. And ethical AI asks whether what we're building aligns with society's standards, human values, and the bar that we've set for ourselves and for society. I can't emphasize enough that when we're talking about like responsible AI, it's operationalizing the conversations and musings of ethical AI. So in a way, ethical AI is the moral and philosophical backbone of all of these efforts. And then we get to my favorite, because my background is in UX design and research, human-centered AI. And human-centered AI takes into account the philosophical questioning and research, the governance practices, the operational layers, and then it starts to ask questions about how do humans interact and experience, and in what ways are they impacted by the technology? It's about asking questions like, well, what are humans good at? What are they not so good at? What do they value? Does this experience preserve human agency? Is what we're building enabling and amplifying human cognition? Can the person that is on the other end of the system actually understand and meaningfully interact with what the AI is doing? And this is where my research and my work lives. It's studying how design choices across the development lifecycle, technical and non-technical, interfaces and impacts people's sense of control, trust, and engagement.
So I'm going to unpack that a little bit. We're often going, okay, that's amazing, that's cool. But you're talking about there's amazing and cool, and then there's useful, there is ethical.
But this is why I love that we're having this conversation, taking it back to these foundational practices, because these three, and it gets way more nuanced and faceted depending on the area of technical to non-technical spectrum of research and work that you do, but they're all deeply interconnected. You can't have responsible AI or governance and policies without ethical principles guiding it. And you can't have ethical principles and questions around the moral compass or ethics of AI without centering the humans that it affects. And then you can't have human-centered AI without governance and structures that hold organizations and people accountable for actually following through. So I'm always surprised that I get to say this, and it always feels kind of like a pinch me moment, but it's really cool that the people that I work with and the work that I get to do and the conversations that I have sits at the middle of all three of these. And it's also looking at what could go wrong at every part of the lifespan of a technological system. And in many ways, especially in the way that we approach technical design, we think that this weight of responsibility ends with the service that's being provided or the product that's been provided. But there's an immense societal responsibility on the individual as well to shape the culture and conversations around AI, how it's adopted, how it's perceived, how and in what ways we as a society deem is acceptable use and application of it and not.
Give me some examples of things that maybe you've seen in the past where we looked at it and went, oh, that's amazing. And then we're like, ooh, no, put that back in the box.
This is why I always say the court of public opinion will always weigh heaviest, because if it wasn't the case, there wouldn't be massive amounts of engineering power and marketing power built into having these robots do TikTok dances just to garner the favor of the public. A couple years ago, Adobe updated their terms and service, says as they do, and the majority of us click through it. I would never, but many of us click through it and go, okay, fine, accept. I mean, I have to accept if I want to use your products. But there were a few wonderful individuals whom I hope their pillow is always cool, that they always hit green lights. They decided to read through the entire terms of service update. And instead of clicking accept, they decided to notify the entire world and again, allow the court of public opinion to weigh in that Adobe wanted to use the work that you were creating using their tools as training material for AI. It became very contentious because Adobe's products are used in almost every industry and some that have incredibly stringent security needs, medical industry, government, and more.
That's where it gets into things that a lot of people don't want to have to deal with. And that's where I want you to explain those concepts. And I know we talked about it before. You talked about fairness and transparency and accountability. And we're going to get into bias because that's a big one that, you know, we all see a lot. But those other ones, those ideas of fairness, transparency, accountability, talk to me about that, because that's one that I think, you know, people can get hung up on, because it sounds like we're preventing people from doing what they want to do, when in reality, we're not.
If I'm giving a quick orientation, I'd like to start with the five concepts that come up constantly, and let's start with fairness. So fairness is this idea that AI shouldn't systematically disadvantage people based on certain attributes, who they are. And that sounds so obvious, but operationalizing this is incredibly hard and complex, because fairness itself is context dependent. We mentioned bias, and bias tends to have a really bad connotation to it, that if an AI system is biased, it's inherently bad. And instead, we need to really look at the degrees of bias in any system, including our own bias, including our own biases. Because again, the way that AI is trained on data and that data is human created, it brings in the biases of our upbringings, our social influences, the conversations we've been privy to and had in the past, and how we and our worldview. So one of the things I wanted to level set on with bias is through an example of manufacturing. So pretend that you and I own a mug making factory, an artisanal cup making factory. We make beautiful designer mugs. But because they are artisanal and they are mixed with like handmade materials and as well as like machine assembly, they're very delicate and prone to cracking. So you and I set up a camera with computer vision to look at these cups as it's coming down the assembly line ready for packaging, and to detect any that are broken before they go into a package.
Sure. Standard manufacturing concept. Yeah.
So the model that we're going to use to classify and detect these broken mugs is going to be biased towards knowing first what is a good cup, what a cup should look like, and anything property-wise that falls outside of this model cup example should be flagged. Well, now take that same computer vision model, you know, that same technical thing that you and I did for our cup factory, and say, give it to our friend who makes posters of mugs. And all of a sudden, you start to see the flaw in its application. This is a really simple example where bias isn't necessarily bad. It's supposed to bias towards a specific purpose.
Right, because in the mug, you would say things like, this is too tall, this is too short, this is too wide, this is too thin.
One of the things that we talk about when we're conducting design evaluations in ServiceNow and conducting research is, are we biasing towards only our customer base? Are we doing enough to consider the extended user base of who might be interfacing with our technology? Are we only leaning too heavily on this side in representation? Where else do we need representation? And I want to say that the industry is doing a lot better of a job on a technical and non-technical level to develop systems and practices that are understanding of the need of this diversity, but also ways to implement that in practice. Another one that is incredibly important is around transparency. And with transparency, something that doesn't get mentioned enough is interpretability. So transparency, and I'm speaking of it on a non-technical application because I don't want to offend any technical researcher going, these are mathematical things. And like, there's a real thing from a systematic level that you're talking about. I'm like, yes. But with transparency, and transparency is, tell me what you're doing, what's going on. Like, people should be able to understand to a reasonable degree what the AI is doing and why. Not from a show me the code and the math level, but give me enough information to make informed decisions about how to trust this output and what to do with it. And that is a core design challenge for designing for especially AI native experiences. Think of AI native experiences like, instead of just having an AI product or feature to whatever you're working on, having it be like the operating system. So with that, one of the biggest design challenges that we're heading up against is how to, when you have this ambient technology that is probabilistic, how do you empower the human further to contest, make informed decisions, and navigate this system, especially because ultimately humans will be held responsible for the work that they're doing with these tools and systems.
It's hard to think about in a technical term or in a technology term. Are we creating discernment or are we teaching discernment?
How we should approach these design experiences is treating the human like a subject matter expert. And given their knowledge of their domain when using AI or when in an AI native experience, can their expertise be leveraged to catch flaws, to know how to use the system in a way that's meaningful for them? Do they understand the limitations? Can we show them the limitations? Can they help improve the system over time with their expertise? And in turn, can the system further benefit them? So it becomes this symbiotic relationship that I shouldn't say is a standard yet, but is a bar that we're trying to hold ourselves to.
We see that a lot in our own platform and a lot of other platforms. Hey, this is AI. It might not be 100% correct. Pay attention. And going beyond that, I think that's pretty amazing.
And that's where we jump into accountability and human oversight, the other concepts that come up often. So accountability, yes, to what you're talking about, like when something is not right, there has to be a clear chain of responsibility. And this is where responsibility models, governance frameworks come into play. And it is our duty to, as system providers, I don't say our duty as in service now, I mean, I talk about the industry as a whole. It is our duty to be clear about that line of accountability throughout the entire life cycle of this AI system or product. And one way of doing that is through human oversight, especially as we move into this deeper agentic AI, native AI space where AI is being given more autonomy, because these systems are being given the autonomy to take actions on our behalf. It's important to keep humans appropriately in the loop, not just to check a box to say, hey, yes, I was here, but as genuine decision makers in the right moment. And this is where human expertise is so important, because it requires someone that knows their domain and their industry very well. I wouldn't be able to step in and audit a podcast AI agent well, because I'm not a podcast host. So I don't get the vibe of how things should flow, how things should be edited, how files should be managed so that they can be processed easily. Whereas you using a podcast agent would be able to detect things that don't sit right. And I say this when we're doing risk and evaluation on the design experiences of AI systems, is that a lot of these considerations and risks live in this gray area. So sometimes the safety and harm could be a slow erosion of human agency or amplifying existing inequity that has been normalized for so long that in a society, we don't notice it day to day, but as it gets amplified through AI, all of a sudden it's much more severe. Because so many of us come from legacy philosophies of software development, there are a lot of misconceptions of like how we approach this evaluation of AI systems. For example, there are misconceptions around bias that it's a bug you can fix. It's not a lot of these aren't software defects. You can't just find a line in the code, patch it up, and ship it. So because these systems are a reflection of our bias in the world, you know, we talked about this previously, it becomes present in design choices. It becomes part of design and problem framings. It becomes a part of and impacted by who's in the room with us when we're making decisions. There's a misconception that if you remove demographic data and you anonymize enough, you remove bias, but proxy variables exist. A zip code can be a proxy for ethnicity or race. A name can be a proxy for gender or ethnicity. Ethnic or racial info, rather than like systemic biases, could also have biases around like education level. There's a lot of socially baked considerations that we have to continuously evaluate to frame our perspectives in the design process and conduct risk assessments that happen very early on. And just like a willingness to slow down when we discover something isn't right.
How do we, and I mean we as a ServiceNow, we approach that and look at that and go, all right, let's make this correct. Let's keep this trust level beyond high.
Every time I answer this question, people sometimes, because through my enthusiasm, people might say, are you drinking the Kool-Aid, Dom? Is this part of the PR package handed with you as you do, you know, public conversations about this? So I always like to reflect with an anecdote. The year is 2020. I'm interviewing with ServiceNow. I'm coming from working with SoftBank Robotics and Brain Corporation deep in the robotics space. And as I'm interviewing at ServiceNow, one of my favorite colleagues asks me a question. He goes, why do you want to move from robotics to IT service management? Seems like a very peculiar transition. And this answer has not changed in the 6 years that I've worked at ServiceNow. Before searching different companies and talking to different individuals that are recruiting, I was searching up ServiceNow, their ethics and their human rights statements and all of that. And we got to think 2020 is pre-ChatGPT, it was still like deep neural nets and machine learning and AI was a thing. And when I was searching ServiceNow, I found a public statement on the ServiceNow webpage discussing, and this is the ServiceNow US page, and this is a very important nuance. On it was ServiceNow making a declaration of adhering to GDPR policies. Now, GDPR is the European Union's set of governance guidelines around handling privacy around data. Why that was so important to me was it was a time where governance in technology and AI was very much non-existent in the United States. It was very much left to the institutions. We have minimal things, but nothing near GDPR. And like to see a company at ServiceNow's scale that could benefit from more lax approaches to responsibility and like privacy, make a declaration like that was very impactful to me. So that very verbose history leads into a lot of the conversations that I can't talk about publicly, but do make me incredibly proud on the work that we've done at ServiceNow, is that like the people that I work with and the people that I talk to at ServiceNow, which span across government relations, policymakers, the lawyers that I debate with in Word docs in my day-to-day work, everyone is very intentional about building responsible AI into how we operate and not just what we say publicly. I wish I could share some of the audits that I had to lead design teams through because of some of our public-facing statements and like the level of rigor and questioning we had to answer around our approaches to responsible AI and our processes. On the governance side, like there are layers of committees and teams that I am so fortunate to get to work with that have very difficult conversations on like the products and services and approaches that we should have in our responsibility to our customers and to people. I think about our public-facing model cards, which 4 years ago was a brainstorming project on a Word doc somewhere, that are now in our documentation. And model cards are like nutritional labels for your AI models. It's these small efforts and the grand gestures of things that we put out that we're not required to do that document to me how ServiceNow approaches responsible AI.
You know, ServiceNow customers, ServiceNow employees, because we're connected to each other so well. What's one thing we can do when we're building AI to build with the best foot forward?
If there's one thing that I could say and urge people to do, whether you are a creator to a consumer, because technically now we are all consumers and patrons of AI, which is incredibly powerful, is to use it as a tool to amplify your thinking and not as a way to replace your thinking. I want people to ask why certain outputs happen the way they are. Ask if you agree. Ask if this aligns with your values, your tone, your voice. Is it inherently you? And the thing that is concerning me is that many people are surrendering their thinking, their creativity. The one beautiful thing about this bumpy tool that makes us unique is this ability to truly be creative and think individually. People have crossed oceans, built monuments in honoring our capability to think. And I just want people to preserve that and not surrender it so freely.
Di, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, thank you so much again for listening. And it's really important to hit servicenow.com if you've got any questions. If you're interested in learning more about the product, if you want to learn more about how to make it work, check out our documentation site at servicenow.com/docs. And again, I'm your host, Bobby Brill. Thanks for listening.